I start with the question, why does art matter to us so much? And then even beyond that, what does that fact tell us about ourselves?
That's Alvin Noe. He's a philosopher at the University of California, Berkeley, and he's also thought a lot about why people make and look at art. And Noe has this theory. He thinks that art is a kind of philosophy. So just like a good philosophical question, what's the meaning of life, or how do you live a good life? Just as a question like that challenges you, he thinks the best art is disorienting. It makes you a little uncomfortable. As he tells Steve Paulson, art can take you into a space that you didn't even know was there.
I make a claim in the book that there's no such thing as pornographic art. What I'm trying to suggest is pornography aims a very particular lascivious function. It titillates, it aims to give pleasure. Mm-hmm. And there's different kinds of pornography for different kinds of taste and different kinds of pleasure. You don't go to pornography to rethink the very nature of your pleasures or what your relationship to your own pleasures is. So in art, Plato, who's, you know, our greatest philosopher.
Who hated art.
And I think he hated it because essentially he thought it did nothing other than titillate. He thought it was really a kind of highfalutin pornography. And I think he was mistaken about that. And I think actually probably he himself understood that he was mistaken about that, because what are his great dialogues but masterful works of art and indeed masterful works of philosophy. But the interesting thing is you could make an art, if you like, out of erotic or sensual or indeed even pornographic materials, but it would no longer be serving the preformed expectations that people normally would bring to pornography. It wouldn't be good for onanistic pleasure. It would actually precisely be disrupting that. Art disrupts. Art subverts pre-existing function. That's why I call the book Strange Tools. Tools are always embedded in a context in which we use them. Hammers have a function. Email has a function. Works of art are strange tools. They're tools whose function is unknown or unknowable or precisely made into a question.
So can you give me a couple of examples? I mean, I'm sure there would be many, but in terms of how art does this kind of philosophical work, sort of helping us to see something, see the world in a new way.
At first, just very generally, I'm interested in that thing which happens when you go to a show or a gallery or listen to a record and you don't get it. And then all of a sudden you do. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of something that was sort of concealed and opaque and uninteresting, all of a sudden can be fascinating and inviting and special. We don't just see, we look and we ask questions about it. Why? What is this? What might it be doing? Is this a picture? If so, it's a picture of what?
So can you give me an example of this?
Yeah, to give one very nice example. When Barnett Newman had his first solo show ever in New York City in the early 1950s, he wrote a note and tacked it to the wall. And in this note, he invited visitors to the gallery to step in and stand close to the works. Now, what's remarkable about that is ordinarily, if you walk into a room with very large canvases on the wall or any large object, the natural tendency is to step back.
Right.
That's a sort of a basic sensory motor competence. You want to step back and see it. Take a look, take it in. So with his little note, he was, if you like, reminding you that this was an opportunity to break that habit. That's, to me, a beautiful example of the way in which he was creating an opportunity for you to do it differently, and in doing it differently, to be different.
One final question. Given all that you said, do you have any suggestions for how we can have a greater appreciation of art? I mean, sort of putting your philosophical hat on, is there, I don't know, something we should keep in mind the next time we go to an art museum or see a show on stage?
You know, one of the themes of this book of mine is that art and philosophy really are in the same boat. So your question I can transpose to, do I have any suggestions about how I can encourage people to value philosophy or to take it seriously? Because philosophy seems so seldom to, you know, yield
any practical value.
yield practical value. And so if it has a value, it's not in its bottom line. It's in what you need to do to find a bottom line. It's in the way you question and the way you think. And I think something very similar is true of art. If it has a value, and I do believe it does, it's not in its bottom line. It's not in the superlative excellence of this thing or that song. I don't think it's even the value of the pleasure it delivers. I think the values have to do with how we can grow and change and be transformed through the looking or through the questioning. You know, it's baseball season now, and one of the things that's striking about baseball is it has its rules and it has its pre-established goals and values. You know, the aim is to win. That means scoring more runs. Going to a gallery or listening to a concert or even just playing a record or watching a good TV program, it's never like that. You can never take for granted a playbook that tells you, this is what you're meant to learn, this is what this is about, this is what this is good for. You need to do that work to ask those questions. That's where the engagement with the work is. If you don't do that, you haven't engaged with the art at all. Just because you pay $25 to get into the museum and you walk through it with one of those audio guides on your head doesn't mean you're having an art experience.
That's the philosopher Alvin Noe talking with Steve Paulson about the book Strange Tools, Art and Human Nature.